two thumbs up back there. Real thorough explanation of baptism. So that announcement is now done. All right. So we're ready? Okay. Here we go. You guys have come to a seminar on the most powerful force in the universe. I'm serious. People will spend large amounts of money and time and energy, you name it, to get love. Or at least what they think is love, because we all know that money can't buy you love, right? But what is it? What is this thing called love? It's very interesting because love, it's like, well, we know, it's obvious what love is when you feel it. But when somebody asks you to explain it or define it, it's, you just can't figure it out. You just don't know what to say to actually put it into words. And I was at this point going to throw up a little video, but have we even gotten anywhere close to that YouTube video? Let's not worry about it. Let's not worry about it. But what it was is a cartoon that Paul Johnson had Twittered. And it was, of course, two squirrels. And one squirrel falls in love with the other squirrel. And so the more senior squirrel begins to sing a little ditty about love. And it's he talks about how it's a discombobulating thing, and he uses words that we don't understand, but we understand that it's talking about love and how love is confusing. And that's the essence of the cartoon right there. Very cute, very fun. And I think it grasps how most people think about love. We know what it is, but we can't understand it or can't really explain it. So obviously, defining love is too much for any cartoon character. and we certainly don't want to turn to pop culture, because music and movies are as, confusing as anything else, And so going there will not help you. It'll only hurt you. So I would like to turn, of course, to the time-tested wisdom of the Bible, because the Bible knows what love is. It knows what love is. And in fact, the Bible does use three different words to describe love. Hello, Natalie. It does use three different words to describe love, and it unveils. Thank you. You can just go ahead and hand one of those sheets out to each person. And but there are actually four different Greek words. The Bible uses three of them, but there are four Greek words that cover the concept that we use one word for, love. And I think that kind of helps us understand something. I think the ancients realized that love was far more complicated than what could be covered with just one four-letter word. And so they used four different words. And I'd like to draw from that, because I was looking at the book The Four Loves by C.S. Lewis. And it explores, what he does in that book is he explores the nature of love through these four Greek words. And he uses different thought experiments and examples from literature, and he tries to elaborate then on these four different Greek words for love. And so much of my information that I'm going to share with you guys comes from this book. I recommend it. It's a good read. And those four distinct words for love in the Greek are phileo, eros, storge, and agape, which we usually pronounce as agape, but it's agape. Agape. And that's the four loves we're going to look at. That first one is phileo. Phileo means friendship in the modern Greek. It's the most common word for love. It's the most common expression of love, a friendship love. It's kind of described as a dispassionate. What I mean by that word is a platonic love. Platonic actually comes from Plato. He tried to describe this love. It's a non-sexually charged kind of love. It does not have that element to it. So it's dispassionate, and it's a virtuous love. It includes the kind of ideas of loyalty to friends, to neighbors, even to strangers, given the right circumstances. It captures a strong bond existing between people who share a common interest or activity. And And so this kind of love, the phileo love, it requires virtue, chivalry, equality to be packaged in it. It's a very noble kind of love. I think a classic biblical example is the love that Jesus had for Lazarus. And I grabbed a key text on that is John 11, 34 and 36. You can throw that up there. And it says, Jesus is speaking, he said, "Where have you laid him?" Because Lazarus had died. They said, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he phileo loved him." And that's a very pure, very platonic, very powerful, very noble kind of love. And believe it or not, Jesus didn't just have this love for Lazarus. God has this love for all of us. This kind of phileo love. A noble, chivalrous kind of love. Throw up that next verse. In John, I believe it's 14. John 16. And actually, this whole section has this word used a lot. It says, "In that day," Jesus is speaking, "in that day you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I will ask the Father on your behalf. For the Father himself phileo loves you, because you have phileo loved me and have believed that I came from God." So there's a real intimacy. Jesus says, I'm not going to need to talk to the Father on your behalf. You can do it yourself because you're that close of friends. There's a friendship there. Even also in this section, he says that you no longer call me Lord, or I no longer call you my servants, I call you friends. There is a phileo love that God has for us. And what causes this strong love to develop are shared values. Don't forget that. I think that's the key point for this, phileo love. It's shared values of courage, character, a love for God, a love for others. These shared values is what makes this kind of love deep and indelible. Now, what damages many relationships, especially marriages, is that they don't develop this kind of phileo love. Instead, they rush right into the next kind of love that I would like to talk about, and that's eros love. Eros is a romantic kind of love. It's the kind of love in the sense of being in love. And now this one is passionate. It's sensual. It's got strong desire and longing attached to it. This eros love longs for an emotional connection with the other person. And this emotional connection will easily spill over into sexual activity. Eros love does not have to be sexual. I didn't know that. I thought it was. I thought it was the same thing, but it's not. It's a strong emotional bonding that easily falls into the sexual. And it's the kind of love that's involved in a dating relationship, as well as, of course, marriages. This kind of love, again, guys, it's highly charged. It's highly passionate. And therefore, it contains huge amounts of power, both for good and for great harm. You see, the danger with this kind of love is that a person, it's so strong, it's so intoxicating that this kind of love, a person can fall in love with it. Now, they think they've fallen in love with this person, but no, they've fallen in love with love. They've fallen in love with this feeling, with this passionate desire, with this rush of excitement. That's what they've fallen in love with. And they think that they've fallen in love with the person when they've fallen in love with a feeling. That's what they're in love with. And so people get carried away with this kind of love. They rush into sex, ushered in by this kind of love, and they can rush into marriage if they go that direction. So as much as the Bible speaks highly of this kind of love, it also issues a lot of warnings with this kind of love, because it knows it's got power. You know, it's like a stick of dynamite. I mean, it can pack quite the wallop, and it's pretty fun to watch. But it also, you got to be very delicate on how you're going to be handling this stuff. It's not a toy. And it's like that. A couple of classic scriptures would be found in the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon. And over and over again in that book, we have the warning, the caution, do not awaken love before its time. Don't awaken it. He says over and over, whoa, hold on there. Don't get too excited. You know, don't awaken love before its time. He's talking about this kind of eros, romantic love. But then the question is, well, why not? Why wait? I mean, it is so exciting. I mean, movies are made out of this stuff. Songs are sung about this stuff. People will do anything they can possibly do to get this kind of stuff. Why hold back? Why wait? Well, I think simply because it can ruin people's lives. It can ruin relationships. When it's opened before its time, when it's opened in the wrong context, the wrong situation, something beautiful, something incredible can become something destructive and even deadly. And that's why God, out of love for us, warns us repeatedly not to have sex before marriage. And since sex is pushed along by Eros love, he's saying, whoa, hold on there, put on the brakes with this Eros kind of love, this romantic love. Wait until the right time. I was surprised as I looked into the scriptures about the warnings of sexual immorality, sex before marriage or sex with somebody that you're not married to. Almost every epistle carries a warning about sexual immorality. Almost every one. I didn't realize that. Just a few of them. Just throw them up there, guys. A few of them. Romans 13:13. Let us walk properly as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and sensuality. 1 Corinthians 6:18. Flee from sexual immorality. Galatians 5:19. Now the works of the flesh are evident. Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality. Ephesians 5:3. But sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you, as is proper among saints. 1 Thessalonians 4:3. For this is the will of God, your sanctification and holiness, that you abstain from sexual immorality. That's just a few of them that I listed. There's more. And so God recognizes how powerful this love is, how much it can take control of you. He gives us plenty of time. This is my will. This is my will for you. Experience. It's not like God being a joker. I mean, he created sex. You know? Let's not get confused of the fact. He made it that way. He made it for people's time, people's things, and people's things. When we like that thing, out of time, out of place, wrong purpose. See, this heightened euphoria, this kind of Eros love cannot be maintained. It will eventually fade. And when it does, people think they have fallen out of love. And really, they've just fallen out of a particular height. They've come down from their high. And if they haven't, if a couple hasn't developed the little love first, then this development of falling out of the Eros love can be devastating. Let's take a look at this storge kind of love. I didn't even know this kind existed until I did this study. It's an affectionate or familial kind of love, a love that happens between family. That's the word storge means affection in the ancient Greek, and it's this natural affection. It's a fondness that is developed through familiarity between family and friends. but mostly between a parent and a child, and between siblings. That's what he means by this storge love. It's described as the most natural of the loves because it's present without coercion, and it pays the least attention to characteristics that one would consider to be valuable or worthy of love. And in other words, it transcends all discriminating factors. Let me put it this way. This is the kind of love that is meant when somebody says, it's a face only a mother could love. That's storge love right there. And ironically, this love's strength is also what makes it vulnerable. Affection has the appearance to others as being built in, automatic. It's ready-made. It's just there, and it just always will be there. And so people will come to expect it, even demand it if it's absent. They think it's an automatic. You should love me, irrespective of their behavior and the natural consequences of their behavior. So oftentimes you get then into abusive situations where whether it's the children or the parents or the spouse will be abusive to the other because they think this love is a given. They don't need to worry about it or even try to protect it or fan it. It's just always going to be there. And so they can take it for granted. And that can of course, create lots of problems. The last love I want to spend a little bit more time on. This love is agape, how we would pronounce it. Agape love. It's an unconditional or a sacrificial type of love. In the ancient Greek, it oftentimes refers to that deeper sense of true love. It's true. That's the type. That I'm telling you the truth. That is it. True love is agape love. Rather than the attraction that is suggested by Eros. And the love that brings forth, this love, it brings forth caring regardless of circumstances. C.S. Lewis, in his book, he recognizes this as the greatest of loves. And he sees it as a specifically Christian virtue. And I'll show you why in a second. Agape, it's used in the New Testament to denote the unmerited nature of God's love. We did nothing to deserve it, and we can do nothing to lose it. Which is interesting, because a lot of people will agree with the idea that we did nothing to deserve God's love, but they think that their behavior can warrant God removing his love from them. But that is not agape love. Agape love is one that you did not earn, and so you cannot lose it. I think Romans 5:8 speaks to this very clearly. But God demonstrates his love, and it's agape love there, his agape love for us in this. While we were yet sinners. While we were sinners. I mean, we were not asking for God's love. We were not deserving of it. We were sinners. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's agape love. God, it's amazing to think that Christ showed us the greatest imaginable form of love, self-sacrifice. When we were in a position that we didn't deserve it. We deserved it the least, and yet he gave us the most. He died so that we might live. That's agape love, guys. This love is then defined for us in 1 John 4:10. This is love. I mean, I love it when the Bible is so clear like that. This is love. Guys, if you're wondering, what is love? You know, you're thinking, what is love? This is love. Not that we loved God. It didn't start with us. It started with God. Not that we loved God, but he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. That's love. Unconditional or unmerited, sacrificial love. That's agape love. Now, psychologists will tell you that human beings are incapable of showing this kind of love. And I think to an extent they're right. Humanly speaking, it's beyond us. We cannot engineer this kind of love. In all the human relationships around the world, there's a give and take. And if you're not giving, if you're not receiving some love, that relationship will die. And I think, humanly speaking, they're dead on. But they're not recognizing a power that is beyond the human element. Because right after this verse in 1 John 4:10 that tells us what love is, verse 11 says this. Throw that up there. Dear friends, since God so agape loved us, we also ought to agape love one another. Wow. John felt that anyone who has experienced the love of God is able to show this love to other people. Agape love, when applied to human relationships, it means a selfless, self-sacrificing, self-giving kind of love. And since that's what most closely resembles the kind of love God has for us. In fact, agape is used in that famous passage called the love chapter. You guys know where the love chapter is? 1 Corinthians 13, the famous love chapter, the word there is agape. It's not phileo, it's agape. It describes right there what this agape love is like under the full pretense and expectation that we're able to do it. That through the power of the love of Christ in our lives, we can show that kind of love. You want to know that kind of supreme love? You want to know what that looks like and how to do it? Well, you got to just take a good gander at 1 Corinthians 13. It says agape love is patient. It's kind. You can't be jealous and have this kind of love, at least not a selfish jealousy. You can be jealous for somebody's good, but you can't be jealous because you're not getting what you want out of the relationship. That's not agape love. It's not boastful or proud or rude. You can't go around demanding your own way and be showing agape love. Being irritable, easily provoked, that's not in keeping with this kind of love. Hardest yet, agape love does not keep a record of wrongs. How about that? Well, how can you possibly do that? Study out the love of God, you'll know how to not keep a record of wrongs. You'll know how to forgive other people. Agape love is not glad when an injustice occurs. You know how you feel when somebody you don't like has something bad happen to them and you can feel kind of good about it? It's not agape love. Agape love never gives up. It never loses faith. It's always hopeful. It endures every circumstance. This is the kind of love that will last forever. It's the kind of love that you and I want. In fact, after studying this out, I realized something. In the perspective of the world, you have not lived if you haven't had sex. If you're a virgin, they feel like you have missed out. Because in the world's perspective, that's the greatest experience possible, is the rush of Eros love. After studying out agape love, I realized that if you've never experienced agape love, then you've missed out. You have not lived life until you have been able to love with an agape love. That's the greatest love imaginable. I think that's probably the biggest thought I've gotten out of this study. So, I realize that this is easier said than done. All right? So, I'd like to introduce us all to a very practical way of showing this kind of love to other people. It's called the five love languages. And I think most of us here are familiar with these five love languages. It was conjured up by author Gary Chapman back in 1995 when he wrote the book, Five Love Languages. And it's become hugely popular. I think even more so, it's benefited people's lives more than I think I imagine. I could ever imagine. It's really been helpful in equipping people with a practical way of figuring out how to love somebody. And I think it's really awesome, and I'd like us all to look at it. See, the idea is that a primary reason for relationship challenges, why there's relationship breakdown, why there's so much pain and hurt in this crazy little thing called love, is simply that people speak what he calls different love languages. Your personal, emotional love language and the language of your friend or your spouse may be as different as English is from Japanese. And believe me, Japanese is different. No matter how hard you try to express love in English, if your spouse or your friend speaks Japanese, they're not going to get it. They're not going to respond the way you think that they should. And then you'll get upset because they're not responding to your efforts to love them. Therefore, if we want to effectively communicate love to others, then we must learn their primary love language and speak it. So let's take a quick look at each one, and then we'll conclude by taking a quick quiz based on these love languages. Okay, the five love languages: words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, physical touch. And the book goes on, and I recommend the book. It's a good read. So you got the four loves, and you got the five love languages. That's your required reading. But Gary Chapman, he feels like there's numerous dialects within each of these five love languages. So that means there's different ways to express love within a love language. That's for you to figure out in the book and over a lifetime. But let's take a quick look at each one, and we'll get to that quiz. First of all, words of affirmation. This is pretty self-evident. These are verbal compliments, words of appreciation and praise, encouraging words. It requires a degree of empathy from your part. It requires empathy, means seeing the world through their eyes, understanding how things must feel for them, and speaking a word of encouragement, understanding how things must look and feel for them. It's kind words. It's the way we speak them. It's our tone. You know, don't talk to me with that kind of tone. Well, just like you can have a tone that's negative, you can have a tone that's positive and speak to others with a tone that is encouraging and affirming. It's humble words, making requests rather than demands. Can I? Would it be helpful if? Making requests rather than demands. Listen, guys, one of the deepest needs in many people is the need to feel appreciated, to feel valued. It's one of the more core needs of a human being. So words of affirmation will meet this need for many people. We need to become masters of praising one another. I think Kristen and I were just reminding each other about a few days ago or something of an idea that was shared with us during our college years, that we should praise people 10 times for every one criticism or correction. Just as a rule of thumb, praise somebody 10 times for every one time that you correct them or say something negative. Words of affirmation. How about quality time? Quality time is, of course, togetherness, being with somebody. It's doing something together, but it's not just being at the same place at the same time. This is giving your full attention to them, or at least the majority of your attention to that other person. You see, togetherness is not just proximity. It's focused attention. That's the togetherness, the quality time that is meant here. It also means quality communication or conversation. Sympathetic dialogue in which two individuals are sharing their life, their experiences, their thoughts, their feelings, their desires in a very friendly and uninterrupted context. That's what is meant by quality time. It's this sympathetic listening where you actively draw them out by asking questions or using tentative expressions. It's not just giving advice or fixing the problem. It's just listening and encouraging them to share even more. This is the kind of stuff we're going to talk about with the seminar on the lost art of listening, because this one is huge. To know how to listen, it is a lost art, and we're going to recover it in 3 weeks. And then also, this quality time involves quality activities, which would include anything in which one or both of you have an interest. You know, Kristen and I have picked up bowling. One or both of us have an interest in bowling. and if quality time is one of Kristen's love languages, then bam! This is good. This will really enhance our relationship. And so that is the emphasis. It's not what you're doing. It's why you're doing it. You're doing it to be with them. You're doing it to be together. And so when I invite somebody to something and they say, well, I don't want to go because I don't like football. Well, you know, that's injurious to the relationship, because they're saying the activity is more important to me than the people. And if I don't like the activity, then forget you. I'll stay home. So think about that the next time you say that to somebody. I don't want to go because I don't like football or whatever they're doing. It could, especially if their love language is quality time, it could really hurt. The next one, receiving gifts. This, of course, is material gifts as well as money. But it's not just the object. It's the thought expressed by actually obtaining a gift and giving it as an expression of love for that other person. This gift is seen as a visible symbol of your love. You know, you can't see love. You can't feel it. I mean, it's intangible. But for people, especially people who have the love language of receiving gifts, and you give them a gift, wow, they see your love. And it can be huge. But this love doesn't have to look like a trinket. It could look like yourself. Being there when a friend or a spouse needs you to be with them. That is also understood to be a gift, is your physical presence in a time of need. So remember, the giving of a gift, it's an outward sign that the person was thinking of you in some way. That's how they take it. It's not like, oh, that didn't cost much. No, you had to think about me. And you went out and you got this. Wow. So it's not the cost of the item. It's not the item itself. It's the fact that you thought about it and acted on it. That's why it's understood to be loving. The fourth one, acts of service. This involves doing things, of course, for the other person that they would appreciate. Such as, you know, that's all, you could have a huge list. It could be babysitting, grocery shopping, washing clothes, doing the dishes, mowing the lawn, fixing broken things, and on the list can go. It's the honey-do list. And if your honey has in her love language is acts of service, and you keep putting off the honey-do list, guess what? That's going to be injurious to your relationship, big time. And the point of acts of service is not just getting something done, but that you're doing it because you care about that person. You're not doing it because it personally annoys you that it's not done, or because they've been nagging you to get it done, or you feel a sense of obligation to do it. that ruins it. No, it's because you care about that person, therefore you do it. That's when it's received as love. The last one is physical touch. I tell you, human beings are interesting. We've got these little tactile receptors all over our bodies. These receptors, we know when they're touched and pressed, they carry these impulses all the way to our nerves and our brains, and our brains feel something. Well, for people with the love language of physical touch, they don't just feel pain or pleasure, hot or cold, soft or hard. They feel love or not loving. That's what they feel. No matter what you're doing, it's either going to be interpreted as loving or unloving. And that's the world of somebody whose love language is physical touch. And this, of course, includes all the usual suspects: holding hands, kissing, embracing, sex, back and shoulder massages, other types of physical touching. But you got to remember, not all touching will be interpreted as loving. If it's not understood to be a loving gesture, then cease and desist, because it's not going to be a winner for you, nor for the person you're trying to communicate love in that way. And so my wife has simply learned that back rubs are just not going to work here for this Norwegian guy. I just don't want a back rub from her or from anybody. Please. But